We're live.
In the last 20 years, I've started four companies, both bootstrapped and funded, software, hardware, and a consultancy, as a co-founder and as a single founder. I've built all of them to more than $1 million in revenue, sold two of them, invested in dozens of others. I actively advise a couple of them. And I still help tens of thousands of people every week on my eight-year-old blog. Can't believe it's that old. That's named after my last company. It's called asmartbear.com. So I've made every mistake, and I've enjoyed every success, and I've helped other people do the same thing. So let's do it some more tonight. From the founder of WP Engine, I'm Jason Cohen, and the Dradcast starts now.
From the bowels of WordPress Nation, it's
time. You know what time it is.
All operators are busy at this time. Please hold.
Drag.
For the Dradcast. Here to talk WordPress news, events, and fizzy pop with community leaders.
Ultimately letting smarter people run the show weekly.
We bring you your favorite Santan alumnus, Brad Williams and Trey Armada. Sit back, folks, grab something to sip on, and get ready to press on. The Dradcast starts now.
Dradcast. Trey, man, I'm pumped. We're at 60.
Man, 60. I feel old, brother. I feel old. What's going on, man?
That's the side topic, but not too much. I'm having a good time. It's fall, so getting excited. My favorite time of the year is upon us. It's almost my favorite season with Halloween closely coming up. Pumpkin, everything. It's an amazing time of the year, so I'm happy. I'm wearing sweats. It's not like crazy. I can't speak for you because you live in on the sun, but where I'm at, it's nice and cool, and I'm living the life out here. How's it going on your side, Jerry?
Well, I've just recovered from a cold. It's 92 degrees or so here in my neck of the woods, and I tell you what, I went on a booze cruise to Ensenada on Carnival this last weekend. I don't recommend it for the faint at heart. make sure if you do it, hydrate. That's all I got. I'm leaving it alone. Those stories, whatever happened in Ensenada, never happened.
Never happened. Well, let's get into it. We have a really exciting guest tonight. Someone who we've spoken to before, and I actually had to go back into the archives because I couldn't remember when. Mm-hmm. And that is Mr. Jason Cohen. Jason, welcome back. Well, welcome to the first time on the Dradcast, so welcome to the Dradcast.
Right. It's great to be back.
Yeah, we're great to have you. So I looked it up, and you were actually, I couldn't remember, it's been over 2 years now. We had you back on WP Late Night way back when, if anybody is listening that used to listen to that show. Or remember, we had you on episode 11 talking about some cowboy codes. So that's way back when. We didn't know what we were doing back then. We're professionals now, so. So we got a great show. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. We're ready to pick your brain and hear all about your experiences. But before we do that, gentlemen, I need to know what you're sipping on.
Hey, what you sipping on?
Now, Jason, you are a professional, and because of that, I know that you have brought something to sip on today. Is that right?
I have. I mixed it in front of you before the show started.
Oh, yeah. So we knew this has got to be a good one. What do you got over there?
Well, the technical name is Boulevardier, but that's all pompous and crap, so we call it a parkway around here. And that's rye. I'm using Bullet. Three parts rye, one part Campari. See, I still have it here, right next to me, just in case.
Ready for the refill.
That's right. And a dry Martini Rossi.
That has to be the most elaborate concoction I've heard of on the show to date. You are the winner, my friend. I need to have one of those with you, though.
All these bottles within reaching distance.
That's awesome.
You know? That's for you guys.
Dre, Mr. Green Screen, what do you got over there?
Yeah, Dre, green screen with nothing. Yeah, I don't have an island or anything behind me, so unfortunately I'm not doing anything tropical. I actually drank every. Damn it. I did it again. Pre-show, it's gone, so I'm just going to sip on water in a pink cup. There's that.
Hold it on the pre-show, man. Well, I have one of my staples, drinking the Captain Morgan Private Stock in my awesome Buddy Press glass, which makes it taste even better. So cheers, gentlemen, to a great show.
Salut, salut.
So where do we start? We got a lot to talk about. I think we talked a little bit prior to the show, and I think rather than kind of go with the history of, you know, generally we have a guest on, we'll kind of go through the history of how you get into computers. I think we'll have to fast forward because you got a lot of things, experience like you mentioned in your intro, in your monologue, about you've done four different startups. You've done startups as co-founders, as a single founder. You've done funding. You've done bootstrap. So you have a lot of experience in the startup world and just running a business in general, which I think is awesome. Having gone down that path, not quite as much experience as you have, but having some. So I always love to talk to other, you know, business owners, you know, people that are into startups, have started startups. So, I mean, I guess why don't we kind of preface the whole conversation with where does that passion come from? Like, when did you started one company, you know, I don't know the history of your companies and what you sold or whatever, but you started a company and then you realize, like, you know, you're good at this. Like, this is, you're good at it, right? And you're passionate about it. So where did that, I guess, that entrepreneurship come from?
I don't think I've ever met an entrepreneur who just didn't already have it in them. You know, like, why do you make a plugin and put it in the repository, especially if it's free? Because you want to. It's in you. You have to do it. Or, you know, similar question, why did you do another startup? Well, the same reason you did the first one, because something. You know, something's causing that. So there's probably some negative, personal attributes, like not wanting to have a boss, or thinking you can do it better, or... even if that means you have to live with the consequences, that's still a better trade-off than the alternative, or some kind of a drive like that is probably part of the answer. But it wasn't. It's not like I thought my whole life I'm going to start companies. It was rather I love writing code. I want to do that. I like talking to the end customer. I don't want to just write code. I want to talk to people and solve those problems. That's the fun loop for me. Is seeing someone use something that I made. That's the loop that I guess is the payoff in the hamster wheel. And so it wasn't that conscious of an effort to do it. And I think also when you're doing a startup, it doesn't feel like you're very good at it, even if you are. And it doesn't ever feel like it's particularly successful, even when it is, even by objective measurements, because all you see on the inside is all the stuff to do. This is broken. This doesn't work. This is about to be broken. I'm worried about this, that, and the other thing. And, of course, on the outside, when you leave the building, even to the other people in the building, for that matter, you don't let that on, right? You don't show that. You show, oh, I'm confident and have no worries because everything's going so well. So you get you're always worried and concerned and feeling bad. I don't think you ever feel like you're sailing. And then it's worse because what you see in other companies is their facades. So they all seem like they're happy and calm and doing really well with very little effort and worry, and you're not. So that gives you then a complex about that and makes it worse, even though, of course, it's not true. So I think the whole, like, how, you know, well, you're successful at it, so therefore you... And even that's not actually how it feels, even if you want to say it's objectively true. I think...
That, yeah. You mentioned kind of having that facade. It's like, especially with technology these days, it's very easy to put up a front. It's very easy for a startup to have maybe a one-person startup and to look like, you know, a corporation, or like a 100-person, 200-person company. That facade, that fit, I don't know, that front that you, and to your point about kind of everything looks rosy on the outside, to put that front up too. When inside everything might be on fire and, you know, people are jumping out of windows or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying as somebody who's done startups. That rings very true with me about kind of having that negativity, because you're seeing the problems, and that's generally what we're on, right? We're on the problems to fix them. How do you look beyond that? Like, obviously, you know, kind of projecting that everything's going great is one thing, but how do you physically break that mentality of every, you know, just because I have all these tasks or these issues I have to handle, it doesn't mean the company's doing bad or what we're doing is wrong. Sure. In any way.
Well, you know, the easy answer is you have objective metrics and measures for what success or you know, goodness looks like. There's financial ones, there's performance ones, there's operational ones, you know, that sort of thing. And that's fine, but of course we all know that intellectual stuff like that doesn't solve emotional problems. So you do that anyway to satisfy the intellectual side. For the emotional side, though, obviously you have to take a different approach. So I'll give you one sort of tool for that. If you think about what happens when you go to a friend's house, you don't walk into the house and think, you know, there's a little crack in the corner over there, and I think that window over there needs the spider webs taken out, and this part of the house is a little mess. You don't think that. You just walk in, And actually, you have a wonderful time because you're not worried about stuff. It's not your house. That doesn't mean you're trashing it, right? But it just means I'm just going to enjoy what's here. And you do that automatically. And you enjoy whatever you're drinking and eating, and you sit on whatever the couch is and that's there, and you just enjoy it. When you're a guest, in other words, when you're a guest, you simply, in a place, you just enjoy what it is. And you don't notice or worry about what is maybe not the best thing. It's just not, it doesn't cross your mind. But when you walk in your own house, that's exactly what you do. I should have fixed that 3 months ago, and every day you see it, it niggles at you, right? And, I should do the dishes, and I should, you know, clean it out, and this chore is, and that's just constantly what's in your mind. Because as an owner, that you see all the problems. But as a guest, as a visitor, you don't. So that's actually a good mentality. So, for example, you could walk into your business, and even just for 15 minutes, you could walk around as a visitor. Just literally think, like, I'm just going to visit. I'm just going to see, I'm going to put all this out of my mind and just see what this is like and experience it, just literally walking around as a visitor. What are the people here like? Do they seem happy? Do they seem like they're doing something? How are things going? And, you know, looking at the stuff, kind of, some people say as an alien, another way to look at it. that's obviously just one tool, but it does help to put things in perspective as an outsider would maybe see it.
That's actually, I love that analogy, and that actually makes a lot of sense. I've never really thought about it like that, but that's a perfect analogy to someone who has that inside perspective. You're right. When you go to someone's house, you're not looking at the imperfections, but in your own house you are, and you know they're there, and they're staring at you every day, right, until you do something about it. So that's a great way to think about it. I'd love to get your take on when you kind of go back to creating a startup and kind of that, you know, the first – before you've actually, started bootstrapping and hiring versus whatever, I'd love to hear your kind of approach and your process to thinking about the startup, the idea. How far out are you planning for initially? Like, are you actually saying, all right, year one, this is our goal. Year 2 to 5, these are our goals. No. 5+, we're going to take funding. No. Or is it much more like, nearsightedness in the terms of, all right, this is what we got going on for 3 months, and then we'll take it from there. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
No, you definitely can't make plans like that. I think it is useful to try to look into the future in the sense that you're trying to understand if this is a business, by which I mean it's a thing that can make a lot more money than what it costs, and how many people might I need, and will I be able to do it? Will people want it? In other words, a lot of times when you have a good idea, of course the idea is good. You're not generating really terrible ideas and getting excited about them, but that doesn't mean they're a business in those senses, right? In fact, most ideas, even really good ones, aren't businesses, which is sad, actually, because it can tend to kill good ideas strictly because they're not, they can't be organized in a way that is a business in those senses. So, are you looking at 5 years to actually project finances? No, but for example, here's a thing that's useful to do in a spreadsheet. Instead of, there's our shirt. That looks good.
Plug.
Instead of making the spreadsheet in time, instead you make the columns how many customers you have. And then you ask, what would it then be costing me to support those customers, to supply them the things they need? Will I have needed someone by then to do tech support, or maybe I don't have tech support? That's part of the model too, is I don't have it, but that means I've invested a lot in self-help and whatever that means in terms of the usability of the product or videos or whatever it is. And so in other words, by thinking, if I were this big in terms of customers, then what would I need to support that? That's useful because you've taken time out, because of course you can't predict time, so why are you trying, right? But you are asking, when I am bigger, is this then a business? And that's a good question. Does the math still seem to work out? That's a better question in terms of looking forward. But in general, I just say don't look forward. And besides, I look at the companies I've made and that I've seen other people do, and with few exceptions, the first idea you have isn't what you built the business around anyway. And indeed, that first idea is not a business, and so what? So do it anyways and go see, use that to be in the market, meaning there is a product and people are using it, and therefore you're getting feedback, and therefore you're hearing what actual human beings are experiencing as they interact with your thing. And that's the feedback you need, which you, You can do customer development ahead of time and ask people stuff, and you should, but you don't really know. It's like the Matrix. You don't really know until you fight them, so you don't really know until the product's in their hands. So there's some prep work, so it's not just a dud completely. But once it hits their hands, it's going to be different. So how far ahead can you plan? Instead, you just have to have your ears open instead of writing business plans and making spreadsheets. I'd say do those only to validate that it's even plausible. But actually, that's not the idea. You should just go in there and seek things.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I do feel that a lot of startups get hung up on forecasting too far out or planning too far ahead, and rather than looking at the now. And it's the same when we clients come to us and say, hey, we want you to build this site. It's a great solutionize everything, and that's awesome. We get excited about it, but they're already planning like, all right, it's a 6-phase project, and this is, you know, phase 6 is going to be all this. And it's like, how do you know that? Like, what happens if phase 1 launches and the whole, you know, the way people interact with your website completely changes phase 2. Now everything else is out the window, right? So why are you spending so much time thinking about something 2 or 3 years out versus phase 1? You know, get the product out and then see how people use it.
You know, when you're larger, you have to be more predictable because of the other processes around it. So, for example, right now at WP Engine, it is important that we are able to predict the future to some extent. For example, we just passed 200 employees.
So amazing.
Which is kind of unbelievable. But we're still growing really fast. We're still doubling faster than every year. Now, with that being said, things like hiring, training, interviewing, how the teams are evolving and what's needed changes quickly, but we have to be ahead. So, for example, suppose we're growing at something like 25% a quarter. Well, obviously it takes at least a quarter to find someone who's great in, for example, customer service, and interview folks to identify that, and then bring them on board, and then train them up, and then put them in the field, and so on. And then, of course, just time for them to ramp up and get used to stuff and our stuff and so on. Of course, that takes at least a quarter before you might say someone's like really good to go and flying, right? It probably more than that, but just keep it easy. Well, if we're growing 25% a quarter, that means we have to be 25% in hiring. And for us, that can mean like, just in support alone, that could mean 25 people, which is a ton to, you know, through the, it's like a marketing funnel almost, you know, finding folks and then interviewing and so on and so forth. And so you can't just go, oh, you know what, I think maybe we need another 30 people tomorrow. Like, of course you can't do that. So it has to be more predictable so that you're able to, for example, hire toward something that's more predictable. And hiring is just, of course, one thing that you're trying to predict and plan around. So for another example, part of hiring a lot of people is being great at training. That way you can hire more kinds of people. As we like to say, we hire for attitude and aptitude, because those are not trainable. Whether or not you, for example, you have empathy really in you is not something that you can teach, right? And being curious and teachable is also not something you can teach, kind of by definition, perhaps. So we need aptitude and attitude, and we can teach you the rest, and that allows us to have a wider aperture for folks, which, by the way, is also awesome because it allows us to hire all kinds of people who may not have other opportunities to do things like get paid more, get benefits, work downtown in Austin, work with people who are doing something important in a great culture, and they may not otherwise have that opportunity. But we can give them the opportunity because we can train them on the facts and figure kind of side of it. So it's also a great thing we can do for humans.
Those are certainly important facets of hiring successfully, and certainly at the scale that you're at, that is, you're at a more mature point than most of the folks probably in the audience that we have. Although wanting to understand the business and hiring and how that growth kind of works, it's more on the projection side of that. What metrics and what tools should they be using to better understand, one, when to hire, who to hire, how many to hire? I mean, those I think are the impactful things that that smaller business in the WordPress space struggle with as they're trying to grow. Absolutely. Certainly gets into that point where, man, now we need to understand that whole process from that onboarding piece into sustaining them in a way, right? Are they qualified or are they overqualified? Am I properly training them into the processes that will make them successful in the role that they're hiring into? But certainly, how do I get to that point of understanding where I need to hire and when?
Yeah, well, so, I mean, we could do a whole hour just on this topic.
Yeah, no doubt,
this is, this is one of those, this is also sort of like, hey, how do I market stuff to people?
Oh, yeah, my God. Yeah. Well,
please tell us.
No, you're right. And so we're in a place now where being predictable is important because we have to do all those things. But that's exactly in contrast to, at the beginning, it's just the opposite. Nothing is predictable, and you shouldn't be trying to predict it because you can't. And so you have to be in a completely different mindset around that. So, hiring. So, I mean, a couple of things. How do you know when your back is about to break, especially if it's bootstrapped? You don't have a choice. You don't have the cash to hire ahead, and that's one of the few reasons why raising money is really useful, is exactly so that you can hire ahead of what the business is sustaining yet, because once again you're trying to predict that you will be able to, but right now you can get ahead of need and therefore serve customers better, because you have more folks in support than you would otherwise have, for example.
Well, it's eating that up front risk, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly. So that's very valuable. So in a bootstrap capacity, obviously you don't have the luxury like that. And you know, this is actually the first company where I've really built it with funding. So most of my career has been bootstrapped, so I completely understand. And so the answer number one is because your back is breaking. Number two, you do want to have a really clear idea of why this person is going to add 10x or more revenue than their salary. Not just replace their salary, but that much more value. And that's when you say it like that and kind of set the bar really high on the outcome that needs, that's useful because it helps you qualify what kind of person. And it might not be the person you think. So for example, you might say, well, if I get the best sort of combo marketing sales type person who can kind of do all that at once and just be outbound so I can focus inbound, that can in fact be a perfect dynamic duo kind of a situation. So that could be true. But here's another interesting thing. It may simply be that, as for example, the engineer who also doesn't mind doing tickets, and by the way, you know, you can do all the support tickets of the company in pretty short order because you're fast and smart, so you don't really need a so-called support person. What you may need is, for example, to not have to take your car into the shop. You may need groceries delivered. You may need, you know, even something like a maid service at home. You may want to, you know, there's all this stuff about your life, and at first you're like, but I'm not going to be one of those douches who can't do anything for themselves. And you know, granted, right? But if you think of it a different way and say, wait a minute, that superpower marketing salesperson is probably a perfect hire. But also what's easier is a part-time assistant who's way, way, way cheaper and actually can give me a similar kind of leverage in terms of my time. That actually can be a very impactful thing in terms of the amount spent and the effect that you can have. And so especially if, you know, you're a sole founder and bootstrapped, it's surprising how powerful an assistant can be, actually, as a first hire, as weird as that sounds. Exactly, because if it can give you 1 or 2 hours back, and even more importantly, the focus and non-worry of some of that stuff, that's actually incredibly powerful. So if you figure, you know, you're working all the time, which means 12 hours a day, 14 hours a day, but there's other things that get in the way and things that disrupt the flow and so on. So maybe it's really 6 to 8 hours of really straight, you know, strong flow if you're lucky. And an assistant gives you another 1 or 2 hours, that's 25% more time in the flow. That's incredibly valuable for the cost of an assistant. Wait a minute, huh? Part-time assistant? I can maybe get that. And so you start doing that math and realize, actually, that could work. So obviously, the answer is different in every situation, and so it's hard to answer. But my point is, it could be very creative, and maybe not the same thing as you think it is. You know, depending on when you think about the ROI of that person that you bring on and what that can mean. I'll give you one other random thought here, because I see this all the time, and I did the same thing for a long time. It took me like maybe a decade really to learn this lesson. So the tendency as the founder or initial employee at a small bootstrap company is this. For example, we need to do some AdWords, or at least try it. So here's how it's going to work. I'm the smart one. I'm going to go do AdWords, and I'm going to figure it out, or at least enough. Then when I figure out enough, I'll be able to hire someone, probably a consultant in that case, right, some kind of part-time somebody or other, to run it. And because I've internalized it, I'll know how to manage them, and I'll know if they're blowing smoke up my ass. Otherwise, it's like I'm interviewing my doctor who tells me I need pancreatic surgery. I don't know what question to ask, right? So at first, I need to know something about it, and then I can manage that person. And that sounds very logical, and it's wrong. And the reason it's wrong is that what you have done in that situation is you've ensured that you will not hire someone who's better than you at AdWords, because you've assumed, now I understand it, and now I'm going to tell them what to do. And so you will hire a B player, because actually you still don't know what questions to ask, because you're not an expert in AdWords, or whatever the thing is that you're not an expert in, right? You're not an expert in most of the things in a business, of course, because you're a human being who's an expert in some things. And so that's the tendency, and so you end up with actually B players in those things that you are already not very good at, and that's bad. That's just mediocre crap. So rather, your mentality should be, my job, when I'm hiring anybody, and this is still the job even at a big company, in fact, it's even stranger, if you want me to explain, I will, at a big company, but the strange thing is, no, I need someone who's actually way better than me, and it's a trick to ask, well, how do I hire someone, what do I ask, if I am not the expert? Now, that's an interesting question. So you might have to be looking for things on this kind of sideways, like, is this person curious? Is this person dragging from experience and explaining specific cases? Can you call other people that they've worked with and they say this person's just magical, or are they over the top? Not just they're good, but just over the top crazy. And is that person smart or not? Right, because often, actually, AdWords is a good example, right? You snow over someone who's not technical. They think you're great. Actually, you don't know anything, right? So is the person I'm talking to seem intelligent? And then so these are all sideways ways to go about it, which you have to do because you can't actually evaluate it yourself. But that recognition that you can't, and therefore this is how I'm going to evaluate people, but also this is how I get people who truly could potentially change the move the needles of my business, whatever needles I want them to move. That's a good mentality, but I find that to be rare, and so that's why I went into it in detail.
I think we need to rethink how we're doing the show, because the amount of knowledge that has just come out of the first 30 minutes, we need to be charging people. This is ridiculous. We should be making some money. No, I'm just kidding. No, this is amazing. This is great, and it's I could talk about this stuff all day. Jason, I know you're passionate about it as well, obviously. Yeah. It's really, really cool to hear your take on some of this stuff. So I would like to talk a little bit, which is money. Hey-o. But you mentioned, so bootstrap versus funding, which I think is a big common question with a startup. Mm-hmm. Do I take money? If I take money, when should I take money? Interesting that you said this, WP Engine being the first startup that you took funding. So you definitely have seen both sides. Dre has been around startups as well, so he has some opinions, I'm sure, as do I. As far as my experience, web dev, we've been bootstrapped from day one. It's something I'm pretty proud of. We've certainly looked at, does funding make sense? If it does, when, where? And it's just not something we ever felt we needed to do. Mm-hmm. We're in a very good position that way. I certainly don't discount that fact. But I'd love to hear your take on, the bootstrap versus funding, and what should people really be thinking about when they are doing a startup, on day one, and looking into decide which direction they want to go.
Like many things of advice, if you just receive advice without that person asking you any questions, that means they're giving themselves advice instead of trying to solve your situation. So, for example, a lot of it depends on the goals of the founders. What do they want from this company? What will they see as success or happiness? What do they want to do with it? And you do get into sort of existential questions. What makes you happy? What makes you fulfilled? Even asking about 10-year time horizons and so on, personally, not about the product, but about what you want to be personally, is important with these kind of decisions, because you are making those kinds of trajectory choices when you do that. Anyway, this is a framework I like to use anyway, just to not avoid the question by saying it depends. So I think you should not take funding. That's the default thing. Don't take it. And then, so that should be the status quo. And then it should be, you should take funding only if, and then you can tick all the boxes, right? If you tick all the boxes that say you should, then you really should, because that's then the correct path for sure for you. And so some of those boxes, for example, are, number one, the thing, this company or market, in here, speed matters. It cannot take me 5 years to get to $10 million in revenue, or else I automatically fail because of the nature of the business or market. So, for example, a marketplace is like that. Because for example, there's eBay, which is an auction marketplace, there's no eBay number two. Nobody wants another place. Buyers want to go where all the sellers are. Sellers want to go where the most buyers are. There is not a room for number two. And so, so if it's that kind of market or business model where being first and fast is critical, that's one of the boxes. Because, by the way, even if you don't raise money, someone else will, if it's a good idea in a big space, right? And then they can therefore partially overtake you, if nothing else, just because they have resources to do it, right? So that's an example of a kind of company that would tick the box. A plugin or theme company is not an example, right? It's not true that someone else starts first or has funding or this or that, and therefore you can't do a theme or plugin that does X, Y, or Z. Not true. Of course you can, right? Like, of course you can do that. So I think, again, most things are not that way, but a few things are. Okay. Another thing is that you can spend that money and then get to certain metrics or defensible positions as a result. In other words, a lot of times, like, well, we'll raise $1 million. Why? I don't know. We'll just hire people and do stuff. Okay, well, that's clearly not a plan, right? And it's not clear that if you do hire money and then do stuff, that you're in an interesting different place than you would be otherwise. Whereas if you can answer that question, then great. Another reason is that you won't be happy unless you build a huge company. So I call this like the TechCrunch effect. You say, if I'm not on TechCrunch announcing that I'm one of those unicorn billion-dollar companies, I won't die happy. I cannot be happy unless I'm one of those, which is a pretty damn egotistical, crazy-ass thing to say, isn't it? I don't count myself as one of the people, for example, who say that. I don't believe that for 1 second, but there's a lot of people who do feel that way and do, for better or worse, ascribe their personal worth as a person to that sort of a thing, that sort of a attention, that sort of a path, that sort of an outcome, and so on. If I don't get that plane and dogfight Larry Ellison over the water, then I won't die happy. Okay, well then you have to go big, and if you're going to go big, it's almost impossible to do that with any path, of course, by definition, right? But your chances are better if you take a big view and you raise money, et cetera, just because you have the money to de-risk that part of it. So again, if that's part of your personal thing, then you need to consider that way. And there's more things, but the point is, default, no, don't, because it's other people you're accountable to. Why would you want to do that? Didn't you start your company in part because you didn't want to be accountable to some investors not involved and has money? Like, why did you just saddle yourself with that? It also puts you on this other trajectory. In other words, now if you don't grow fast, if you don't try to own a market, if you don't try to build big, defensible, blah, 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 if you don't have really great margins, if you don't yada, yada, all that stuff, then it is going to be a failure, because that's the kind of company you build when you raise money. And so, if that's precisely what you want to do and that sounds like the best possible thing, then then there you go. But if any of those things are not true, then I think you have to put TechCrunch down and realize that's all bullshit, all of it. It's all posturing and bullshit. Yeah. And the way you know that, by the way, is because all the companies that are darlings for years, then they run into a little trouble, or they're not a billion-dollar company after all, and then that's it. They're vilified and shit. And it's like, well, but wait a minute. 3 weeks ago, you ran an article about how they're the smartest guys ever and so on. That's how you know that it's all just posturing and bullshit. It's fun posturing, but like it's sort of intriguing, right? In the same way a soap opera could be intriguing, right? Sure, granted, fine, awesome, but it's not real. It's not real, and so it's hard. Again, emotionally, we keep talking about that. But look, a lot of startup stuff is emotional, after all, and it's hard to disconnect from that and say, no, I don't care if someone asks me about raising money or about an exit or about all this shit and makes me feel small because I didn't do that or something. It's hard emotionally to really be in a solid place where you can say, no, I honestly think that other person is the one with the wrong worldview. That other person is the one who's not valuing things correctly. They're not valuing things like the promise of entrepreneurship in the first place, which is that this is your place, and it is your life, and it's a lifestyle that you want, and it's working with people that energize you instead of just have to be there because we have to do this job, working on problems that more or less are problems you like solving. I mean, a lot of work is just work, of course. What most artists do is work. You have to pay the bills and do stuff and get art in places. Like, most of it's work, of course, that's true of life, but nevertheless, the other parts are really energizing, and I've chosen it, even the bad stuff, I've still chosen it, it's mine. That's that kind of stuff, that's the actual promise of entrepreneurship, and it's one of the amazing things we get to do, in this country and the other sort of affordances that we have on this program and a lot of people listening too, that's an amazing gift that we have to go do and to say, no, no, all that is not enough. Also, I have to, I don't know, ring the bell on the NASDAQ. Like, really? Really? After this incredible gift you have of being able and the opportunity to do something like this and even make yourself happy and the people around you and create meaningful jobs for a group of people and make that and you say, no, I have to do this other egotistical thing. Oh my God, seriously? So I'm going on and on because, again, I think many people have complexes about this and do feel inferior, and it's wrong. And that's why I'm beating it, because it's just wrong to feel that way, but it's hard to argue with emotion, so I'm trying to paint that.
I think one of the biggest things that touched me or has touched me in those situations, mm-hmm. especially through a funding round, is the other people around me, whether it was people external, relationships, for example, with Brad and other people like you that I may have had external to the organization that I was building, but the people internal as well, that were there from the beginning. And those choices, those decisions that were made, whether it was to try to get to the NASDAQ or TechCrunch or what have you, mm-hmm. had direct influence and impact on them, their situation within the organization, because it certainly changed the trajectory of the company and the growth that I was involved with.
Yeah.
How do you take that in? How do you drive that? How does that change in a situation, for example, where you see WP come out doing really awesome things and then it grows into position through funding into a 200 person company?
Yeah.
How did that affect the climate and the culture of the company?
What's amazing is our culture is and you guys know this because we talk all the time, and you've seen all our folks, and you've visited, and you see us at WordCamps, and so I know you guys know this, but our culture is so strong, and it is stronger now than it ever was, and that's through a lot of diligence, because it's just the opposite happens when you grow, of course. It's hard to keep that kind of attention on hiring. You have to be willing to fire even very high-performing people if they're also assholes or otherwise not part of the culture. You have to know what the culture is.
I mean, that's for sure.
Yeah, but you have to know what the culture is. Like, we value honesty. Bending the truth isn't necessarily being an asshole, right? White lies we do all the time. But actually, it is not acceptable at WP Engine, for example. So we'll use that basis. And so to really identify, these are the things that actually matter to us, and it matters so much that literally we will make all decisions based on it, period, because that's who we are. But on the other hand, we then get the strength from that, right, that we are all here together. So we're an incredibly diverse company, and not by design. We don't never say we got to hire women or we got to hire, black folks or whatever. We never said that. But again, you guys know, you walk into our office and it's just everybody, one half of the people who are chief something officer are women, one half of our VPs are women, one half of our directors are women, including in engineering. And so, but that wasn't because we went out to hire women, that was because we knew what everyone does have to agree on, which are these values, which literally are on the wall in our office, and it's on our website too. And but by knowing this is what we believe, this is what we will, select for, that allows all the other variables to run free, and you get to hire the best people you can find and all those other variables. And so in that regard, and again, only because we're so vigilant at it, and that's not because I'm the best. I have this great exec team who also lives and breathes that and knows also how to continue to inculcate that with everyone and so forth. And it's why people come and stay, I think, kind of more than anything else. I always say, a good person can always walk across the street and make 10% more money because they are whoever they were when they came to your company, plus a year of experience, and people will say good things. So of course they can, right? So number one, you got to take care of your own folks, of course. But number two, it has to be a place where a good person wants to stay. And some of that's comp, but a lot of that has to be the opportunity and what they can do in their career and who they're working with and whether it matters and what that environment's like, if they want to come to work every day. These are the things that matter there. So, I mean, certainly as you scale, those are the things to focus on, because that's how you're going to get more people or not, or keep people or not, or maintain that culture, or else you just turn into a gray mass, and then you're just Dell, where there's thousands of jobs, and I suppose that's better than not jobs, but no one wants to be there, and that's that's sad. If you want to do that, just go work at Dell. I mean, that's the example in Austin here. And again, just as I just said, the promise of entrepreneurship is all of this that's more than TechCrunch. Well, okay, another thing, at least for me, is building these the ability for hundreds of people, maybe even thousands someday, to have these kind of careers and experience, because that's important. That's actually doing something important in the world. And again, since this is not my first company, and I have gotten to see and do that adventure with bootstrapping and selling companies and all that, this time around, I felt, actually bid bootstrap WP Engine, by the way, for the first 18 months. It was going to be another bootstrap, and it was another bootstrap company. Yeah. But I realized I wanted a new journey this time, and that the kind of company and the market and so on could, is big enough and could support that journey. And so it's not because I want to be on TechCrunch, but rather because having done the journey a few times, I wanted new challenges and everything. And I saw also that doing things for other people, that sometimes that's our customers, of course, sometimes it's our own employees, that is in many ways more rewarding than our fantastic metrics that we also have. But really the metrics, that's why we're a business and that we can continue to exist and thrive. That's necessary, or else we don't get to exist at all, right? So of course, and of course I'm proud about that too. It's difficult and all that, but what's fulfilling and what's important isn't that. It's then what do we do with that? What do we do with a huge growth rate? What do we do with all these people we're hiring? Who are we hiring? Why? What are we doing for their lives? So for example, people in engineering came from support. People in marketing in our company came from support. In sales, in account management, in training, in finance. Every department you see, people from support are there. Why? Because one of the things that's really important to us is that people can come in from wherever with whatever background, etc. And if they have the drive and desire to do things, that there's an opportunity to do that. And that's important. That's literally helping to change somebody's life. And we do that, and that's at whatever scale. It's for 20 people, for 2 people, for 200 people. It doesn't matter. It's important, period, end of story. And so that's the kind of thing that really energizes me. You can probably tell because I'm talking too fast. But that kind of thing, that's that using our success to do things like that. There's other ways too, but whatever. We're talking about hiring and so on right now. I mean, that is important. And again, like that's not a matter of scale. That's you and your co-founder, end of story. That's you and your customers. That can be the end of the story. It's not about big. It's just about doing something that matters. And again, I think all of that stuff is 10 times, 100 times more important than the TechCrunch style stuff. And I think the more any of us internalize that at any scale, any kind of product, et cetera, that's a better world. And also I think it's more fulfilling and happy yourself. And maybe even to call back on how do you kind of get over the grunge of the grunge work part, maybe that's part of how. Is looking to your left and seeing one person whose life is just substantially better because of all this, boy, that could be a good answer to that one, right?
Yeah, that's a whole lot of tacos right there, big guy.
Sorry. All right. I got talking too much. All right.
Are you kidding me? I want to extend the show for two more hours, but I don't know that we could do that. That has been amazing, probably one of my favorite shows out of 60, and I'm honored. That's all I got there. We're going to have to move it on because we are really running out of time. Folks, let's hey, Brad, let's hook this up, baby. Let's go to this week's Pressing Topics.
Word. Pressing.
Topics of the week.
You know, one thing that you've often talked about, I'm a big fan of it, is look, where's the market going to bear, right? I want to raise prices. I want to raise rates. I think it's important to value what we're offering to the public, and they should be doing the same. We've seen lately that a lot of influences around that with developer contracts and public perception. WP Tavern wrote an article on this and talking about what those contracts look like. And maybe where should cash be? How does raising prices translate to that type of contractual type work or when you're raising rates as an independent freelancer? That's something that I'd like to learn about in about 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Oh, boy. Okay, here we go. Ready? I can't do anything. I talk too much. You know better than that.
I love it, dude. I can't.
Right, there's, all right. There's 10 seconds go, right there.
All right. I'll do what? Did I just use some of the 30 seconds now? I'm really.
We'll give you a fresh 30.
Okay, fresh 30. I'm a freelancer. I want to charge a lot, but it's just me. Maybe it's me and a friend. And how do I do that? So a great analogy that everyone understands is a boutique. What's a boutique? It's a shop that's only open when the owners are there. It's not open all the time. It doesn't have a front desk person. Nobody answers the phone. If they do, they'll return your message in a couple days because it's only 2 people. Also, it's super stupid expensive. Like, you go in there and think, "What? You got to be kidding me. Like, the hell is this? It's crazy, crazy expensive. What's wrong with you people? But why is it that with basically the worst kind of a not big company experience, whatever a big company is, stare at a big company for and all the things they have, like 24/7 support and blah, blah, stare at that for 4 minutes and then look at a blank wall. And the after image you see, that's a boutique. It's none of those things. Nobody's answering the phone. It's not open. You're not going to get a quick response, et cetera. And they're super expensive. So this is what you should be as a freelancer. So how do they justify it? That's the trick. Easy. Super high-end expertise. So what does that mean? So, for example, let's say I'm a freelancer. Look, I was a consultant too, so I've been in these shoes. It's not theoretical. And so I'm a consultant, and I'm fighting a bigger agency over a job. So what do I say? Hey, look, I know there's a big agency, and I know you're talking to a partner. That's because you're in the sales cycle. Mm-hmm. That partner is not going to do your work. They're going to hand that down to an associate level two or whatever it is. Then they're going to charge you three times as much, of course, and they should. That's their business model. Of course they are. So you're paying for you're paying more than I would even charge you for an associate level two to go do the work. That's not true at a boutique. At a boutique, it's the owners who do it.
Absolutely.
That's what you're paying for because it's the owners and not associate level two. And so, yeah, it's me. And because it's me that you're getting every time, it's not cheap. And I can't answer email 24/7. And I can't, you know, blah, 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 because it's actually me. So you're right, I'm not going to answer the phone if I'm switching now to a hosting mentality. I'm not going to answer, well, we do answer the phone at 2 a.m., but I'm not going to answer the phone at 2 a.m., but when I do answer it at 2 p.m., it's going to be me. And you can't buy that.
You know, and that's exactly it. And I think that Sarah Gooding did a good job talking about the other side of that. We're in the WordPress space. How does public perception of WordPress, it's free, how does that influence developer contracts, right? Because it is going to be very different at the boutique level than it is an agency and so on. But WordPress specifically, how do even at scale, enterprise, how are they viewing that WordPress piece and the perception of that in terms of when they're negotiating contracts?
Well, I think you have to cast WordPress as the crown jewel of the thing that you're trying to create. In other words, if I think about it from the marketer's perspective, marketers do not wake up and think, gee, I wish I had more websites to manage, or gee, I wish I had more WordPress sites, right? It's not that nobody wants more of it. I mean, it's not because of WordPress. I mean, nobody wants more of any particular thing, right? Like, that's not what they want. They have some actual goal. I'm trying to launch this campaign. I'm trying to make my brand look good and work well. I'm trying to move quicker than I can work with some kind of proprietary system. Mm-hmm. I would like to do easy things cheaper and hard things are possible. And I'm trying to generate sales leads. I'm trying to do a backend of a mobile site. I mean, there's all kinds of things that a marketing person at an enterprise level company, for example, is trying to actually do. WordPress is the means to all of those ends. It's not the end. So as a pitch to say, I'm creating a WordPress site is not the pitch. And also, they don't want a WordPress site. They want something.com, or they want a really successful conversion. And you look, WordPress is the crown jewel. Why? Because I can drop in this plugin and tweak it so that that's $5,000 and not $50,000. Because I can take this theme framework and add to it so that that part is $30,000, not $60,000. So that you can then launch copies of this thing almost for free, or as otherwise you wouldn't, et cetera, et cetera. Like, there's all these things that WordPress buys you, in a sense, gets you, because it's WordPress. That's why WordPress is so good. So it's not a WordPress site. WordPress is an enabler for all these different things. And notice I didn't say $1,000 instead of 50. It's like, no, it's 20 instead of 50, right? Like, no, it's still $20,000 just for that piece that WordPress is enabling that. Where after I have this framework set up that we've built for 100K, 200K, then when you want to do this tweak, it's true, you may not necessarily need a boutique firm to do a small tweak. Now you're talking, that's part of WordPress. You can go edit the site yourself and not pay a boutique $200 an hour to tweak something. No. And WordPress is part of why you don't need to do that. Of course, when you need to do something material, then yeah, it is $200 an hour, and we'll talk about how it's 100 hours. And so it becomes part of the story, it becomes an enabler, but not the end of the story, and not lumped in with the, you know, I'm a restaurant, I have no money, and all that kind of stuff, which is part of what that article was about, I think.
You heard it here, folks. WordPress is an enabler. One thing I want to enable you to do is make better security decisions. iThemes this week suffered a security breach, but as responsible as they typically are, they disclosed this really responsibly, and I wanted to make sure to point out that they've done what they needed to do to patch their system, It was their main system. It had nothing to do with where their software sits, so you're not at risk there. The plugins, everything's fine. All of your transactional data, so any of the payment stuff, good to go, third party. Everything segmented properly. They did a good job of squaring everything away, and they're going through a full audit to make sure that everything is good to go. So go take a look on the iThemes blog. They've got more amplifying info on that to help you through any questions you may have. So kudos to them for getting that info out and moved on. Guys, let's move on to this week's Bar Tricks.
Let me show you a bar trick.
I'm going to go ahead and start this off. This is real easy. You need to go to your browser right now, go right up to the search box and type in blogasmartbear.com. That's all I got. Dude, drop the mic. That's some good shit right there. Done. Next.
Jason, what do you got over there?
Well, since we're on the kick of business tricks or business things, here's a bar trick. When you're getting started with a product or a kind of a thing, and you want to call people and interview them about their pain and whether they would buy this thing, it can be hard to find those people. So I've got a trick for how to get 30 interviews with actual potential customers. And because I did literally this when I was starting WP Engine, I'd already started the company, but we were doing hosting, but I wanted to know how am I going to build sort of the next thing on top of that? What should I build? How will I find out? And so this is literally what I did. So I know for a fact you can do it because I did it. Just a few years ago. So here's how. I went to LinkedIn. I searched for WordPress consultants. Guess what? There's a lot of them. Okay. And by the way, they all answer the phone. I'm saying that metaphorically. It's email and in-mail and whatever, but they all answer because they want business, right? So of course you can get to them. And then I sent them all an email that said the following. I've got this new company in the WordPress space. I'm trying to figure out what to build next. I have some ideas I'd love to run by you. And here's the key part, because people get emails like that, and anyway, now I'm asking something for nothing, and that's wrong. So here's the key part. Then I said, I know your time is valuable, and I do not want to take it for free. I am willing to pay whatever you think is fair for an hour of your time, even if that's more than your normal hourly rate, because I understand this is just 1 hour out of nowhere, and that there's overhead there. Anything you think is fair, I'm happy to pay. I really do want your opinion because you are my potential customer, and I really want to know what you think. And I sent about 30 or 40 of these things out with InMail or whatever I used to get to them. Every one of them responded back. Who responded back, I should say. All of them, which was a total of 30. That's a lot. Everyone who responded said, I'd be happy to get on the phone. Sounds interesting. Can't wait to hear what it is. And no, I don't. You don't need to pay me anything. This will be fun. Everyone. It didn't cost me a dime. I was very happy, by the way, to pay $200 an hour to each one. Very happy because I meant it. And in fact, I was expecting it. I was budgeting for it because it's the right thing to do. But actually what happened was I spent $0. That's but the fact bad. That I was respectful and honest about everything about it earned me the meeting and actually earned me the meeting for free. So I say to everyone on this podcast, why wouldn't that work for you as well?
I couldn't agree more. I'm still the premise of if you don't ask, you don't get. Just do it nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Bradford, what you got there,
that's,
big boy?
That's a tough one to follow up because that was pretty damn good. Not one I would have thought to do.
Mic drop.
Yeah, guys, ooh, you're killing me here. All right, so I'm going to promote a new service that was launched recently, and it's actually called Flox. You may have heard of this. There's a great article on WP Tavern. So Flox is a new startup, I guess you could say. It basically allows you to do hosted private networks, and it's built on WordPress, BuddyPress. And it's actually built by our good buddy John, Trip J, John James, Jacoby, Mr. Buddy Press. Really good guys building this startup. It looks pretty cool. Hosted private networks. It's mobile only, so it's literally all done through the phone. There's no desktop version at the moment anyways. And they're in a kind of a private beta, but you can go check it out. So if you go to flox.io, there is a way you can sign up to try to get a beta invite. Pretty cool idea. I love seeing startups and just sites in general doing different interesting things with Buddy Press. A big Buddy Press fan. 2.1 just came out here, which is awesome. So it's pretty neat. I'm anxious to see when this goes live. I can sign in and check it out. But definitely hope it does well. John's a good friend of the show, good guy as well, big contributor in open source space. So go check it out, flocks.io, and there is an article on WP Tavern if you want to learn a little bit more about it. We'll have that in the show notes.
Shucky ducky. Events coming up. We got WordCamp Europe September 27th through the 29th. Prestige Conference. We know that our buddy Lisa Sabin-Wilson will be on hand to chat it up. October 3rd through the 5th, there'll be a live stream available that day. The week before WordCamp San Francisco, which is October 23rd to the 25th, you've got Baltimore. I know, Brad, you're going to be heading up there. That's the 18th and 19th.
I will be there.
The house. Make sure to throw the deuces. Pressnomics 3 coming up. First month of the year, January 22nd through the 24th. I'm ending the year right before the holiday in Vegas. Got to do it. I do it every year. Mr. John Hawkins and company over there crushing it on a yearly basis. WP Weekly Live coming up after the Dragcast, 9:30 tonight, so stick around. Make sure to catch them. They've got some awesome stuff going on over there. Folks, this has been amazing. You're not just a smart bear, you're a smart cookie. Jason, you're just awesome, man. Where can folks find you?
Well, the blog you mentioned, right, blog.asmartbear.com, yeah. Also on Twitter, asmartbear, also, of course, wpengine.com. And I'll be at WordCamp San Francisco, too.
We will see you there. Excited, excited for that. Bradford, man, this went by way too fast. We need like another 2 hours.
Seriously, we could do a double show. Jason, we'll have to have you back on very soon.
Anytime.
Love to have you back.
I can talk forever, as you know.
Do a double header next show, right? It's great stuff. I'm anxious just to listen back to get the things I missed as I was reading show notes and stuff. So, awesome show. Definitely appreciate it. You can find, to Dre's question, Twitter, Williams BA.
Hey, make sure to hit us. If you can hit Williams BA or at Dre Maida on Twitter, if you want, if you got some T-shirts, some cups you want us to drink your favorite beer out of, drop it. We'll do it live on the show. We'll kick it off for you. Man, what a great episode 60. There's a lot of room for growth in a community that's just growing its wings, a community that's just a decade in age. Oh, often in young industries, it's new innovations that lead the way. Frankly, it's solid business applications on ideas that have been around forever. We have seen it time and time again over WordPress's life where theme businesses and plugins with the same functionality each find an audience to prosper in, time and time again. We have seen managed hosting start, expand, and grow to the point where it's competing with the big boys of the hosting world. Some have even grown beyond that scope of traditional hosting into huge 200-person teams. It all goes back to the same old cliche, ideas are just ideas until you execute. There is some truth in that, but that's only the beginning. Once you execute, you have to learn to scale. Even some of us in the WordPress world can do that in a huge way. We've already seen it. Now go and do something that matters. For the Rad and Drad, I'm the Doctor. Thanks for joining us on episode 60 with Jason Cohen. We're out, baby. Booyah!
Booyah! There you have it, folks, the latest edition of the Dradcast. If you dig the show, make sure you pass it on. If you have content for the show, want to submit to be a guest host, or just want to listen to older episodes, visit the Dradcast website at dradcast.com. While you're there, make sure you click the iTunes subscribe link to catch us on iTunes.
Don't forget to follow at Dradcast on Twitter, and we thank you for tuning in.
Join Dre and Brad plus a new guest host next week.
Yes!
On another episode of the Dradcast. Drad.